5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Ladies and gentlemen of the AFM, this is the White House in Washington calling. I present the President of the United States.
I appreciate this opportunity to extend my greetings and best wishes to the nation of the Alaska Federation of Navies. I want you to be among the first to know that I have just signed the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. This is a milestone in Alaska's history.
The corporate whale, ANCSA, the first 10 years.
The Reverend Mercurius from St. George Island.
This land of Alaska, which thou gave to our ancestors who had come and gone before us, is now being handed to us a second time by the act of the United States Congress and our untiring effort. A second chance is given to us by thee to be the new custodians and caretakers.
That second chance began on December 18, 1971, when President Richard Nixon signed into law the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, ANCSA, a bill granting Alaska Natives $965.2 million and nearly 44 million acres of land in exchange for extinguishing Aboriginal claims to that land. An exchange that took years of difficult negotiations to get through Congress, and that is now taking years of difficult negotiations to implement. Imperfect as ANCSA may be, leaders involved in the fight for a settlement generally agree that given the times, the bill is as good a solution to the land claims problem as could be negotiated. In 1971, Morris Thompson, now a vice president of a Native regional corporation, Doyon Limited, served as area director for the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Alaska. Later, he moved to Washington, D.C., and became Commissioner of Indian Affairs between 1973 and 1976.
Since 1976 and into the 80s, we have seen for the first time Indian legislation to the floor of Congress and voted down overwhelmingly. And I think that will indicate that there has been a shift in the mood in Congress from one of doing justice, equity, and if you would, a conscious vote in some instances, to one of sharp questioning and closer examination of legislation affecting Indian people. I think had the Settlement Act come 8 to 10 years later, it would have, yes, definitely been much more restrictive.
Those restrictive provisions included in the Act, what the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act is and how it divides up the land and the money, will be discussed in this program, the second in a 10-part series, The Corporate Whale.
Dividing the mock top, it's the way it's always been. Dividing the mock top between family and friends. We're sailing toward the future, we're anchored in the past.
With the passage of the Land Claims Settlement Act, there were new ways and other traditions to learn to make the promise inherent in the paper translate into the entitlements it guaranteed. Already, Alaska Natives had been forced to make rapid changes as Russians, Americans, Canadians, and Europeans discovered and explored Alaska. And under ANCSA, more changes were required. In 1966, Willie Hensley, while a student at the University of Alaska, authored a paper entitled Right to Land Have the Alaska Natives. Now, 10 years after those rights became law, Hensley is president of Nana Development Corporation, a Native corporation subsidiary, and chairman of the United Bank Alaska.
There's been a great deal of confusion in our people's minds as to what to do. The entire inner world, that is the linguistic world, the psychological world, the spiritual world, the legal world, you know, the economic world, the whole world of our peoples up here have, in a rather concentrated period of time, they've had to change.
Changes that leaders were charged with explaining. Not an easy task with a densely packed piece of legislation in a language that is not always easy to interpret, especially to people living in villages that may not be connected by roads, with perhaps only one not always in service telephone for 200 or 300 people, and whose primary language may be Yupik or Inupiaq or Gwich'in, not English. John Sackett is a state senator and president of the board for one of the largest Native regional corporations, Joyon Limited.
There's a difficulty in explaining it to not only the shareholders, but to us as leaders. When you recognize that it's taken 10 years to get this far, the amount of time that it took to learn during the 10-year period is phenomenal for the leaders to understand all of the intricacies of the Act and of corporations in general. And it's not anything that anybody can understand immediately. You have to put it out and trying to explain it in common language.
Lee Gorsuch was given the task early on of explaining ANCSA. He came to Alaska in 1970 as an economic planner sponsored by the Ford Foundation. Today, he is executive director of the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research. In the interim, he authored a book distributed to all regional and village corporations, Implementing the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act.
The land claims dealt with three major kinds of issues. The one was the amount of land that the native people of Alaska were going to be granted as a part of the settlement. The second was the amount of money they would receive as essentially what was regarded to be remuneration or a cash settlement for the lands that were taken. And the third was the organizations that were going to be created through which the money would flow to individuals and organizations following, by and large, the ethnic lines of the cultural groups in Alaska. On the first issue, the native corporations that were subsequently created were going to receive 40 million acres of land. Subsequently, under various options that the groups had that were on large reservations that had the choice of either taking land under the terms of the settlement or simply taking the reservation land, such as the Venati and Tetlin and so forth, the actual amount of land to be conveyed, I think, is now approximately 44 million acres rather than the 40 million acres. And that land estate was going to be divided up into different categories. Village corporations would get so much, regional corporations would get so much, and individuals would get essentially the land they occupied for their home sites or campsites or, in some cases, manufacturing sites. So the money was roughly divided among the corporations and those three different types of groups, regional, village, and individuals. There were also provisions for groups of individuals who weren't large enough to certify as a village. They received some land. There was also some additional land set aside for historical sites, cemeteries, and what have you. The money was essentially $962.5 million to be paid out over 11 years on a scheduled payment. And those payments basically have proceeded pretty much on course, with the exception of the state of Alaska accelerated its contributions, which amounted to $500 million, or essentially half of the cash settlement was to be paid by the state of Alaska. And the state of Alaska, the year before last, accelerated its contribution and essentially paid off its indebtedness to the Alaska Native Corporations. So that as of today, all the money that was to be paid out to the Native corporations, the full $962.5 million, has been paid, and no more money will be received by the corporations as a result of the Claims Settlement Act's cash settlement. The third important element was the organization of how people were going to benefit from this land and money, and the Act essentially created regional corporations that were to be for-profit. And it authorized the creation of what became 13 corporations, 12 following the broad cultural groups within Alaska, with a provision the 13th regional corporation could be created for the benefit of Alaska Natives, irrespective of their cultural ties that lived outside of the state of Alaska. The second class of corporations were to be village corporations. And essentially, those places that had 25 or more Alaska Natives, the majority of all the residents of the community who happened to be Native, would be eligible to be certified by the Bureau of Indian Affairs as a Native village. And they were going to receive, essentially, cash and land as a part of their entitlements. Individuals who didn't belong to a particular village but live, say, for example, in Anchorage or Fairbanks, those individuals would receive their equivalent share of the cash that otherwise went to the village corporation directly as an individual. And the key to the whole thing in terms of creating these corporations was an enrollment process whereby everyone who was one-quarter blood, Indian, Aleut, or Eskimo, or any combination, who had been living at the time at which the Settlement Act passed, was entitled to enroll or to go on the membership roll. And when you signed up on a membership roll, you indicated where your home was or where you regard your home to be, and that began to determine whether or not you were going to be a member of a village corporation and a regional corporation. And so the membership of the village and regional corporation became automatically determined on the basis of the enrollment. And that was essentially accomplished in about a two-year period of time, after which the corporations were off and running.
Let my people dance. Let my people sing. Let my people dance. Let their voices ring.
Getting the corporations running wasn't so simple. The critical task of compiling the roll of Alaska Natives eligible under the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, the corporate shareholders, fell to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. More than 76,000 Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts enrolled, due in part to an aggressive ad campaign. Former BIA Commissioner Morris Thompson.
We had the public service announcements at halftimes of the football games, at the Super Bowl. We had Cher Bono and then the late Chief Dan George made spots for us that appeared in print, in newspapers. We held press conferences up and down the West Coast, took Alaskan personalities up and down the West Coast to be on talk shows, to give interviews, to appear at Indian centers, and use some rather innovative methods of seeking out Alaska Natives.
Native, that is, as defined by the Act. Definition that excludes those born after December 18, 1971, the date ANCSA was signed into law. Lee Gorsuch.
There were clearly individuals who felt that somehow by having established a single date, that essentially all children who would be born after that date of Native ancestry, or Native blood, would not be a member, per se, of the corporations unless they inherited stock and became, through inheritance, members of the corporations. And I think there are many people who felt that was a potential weakness. It just became an administrative convenience for deciding how to carve up the money, how to decide the amount of land to allocate, and that it built in certainty to what otherwise could have been a very uncertain and sticky situation.
The Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act consistently finds its own way to avoid sticky situations and distribute benefits, rather than mimicking other Indian legislation. Partly for that reason, ANCSA has often been called a social experiment. Hensley.
But who in the hell wants to experiment with the survival of a people? You know, it might be an experiment for congressional staffers and congressmen and bureaucrats. You know, the way I look at it, it's it was either lose it all, that is, lose complete control of our space, or do the best you can, you know, in a situation in which you did not control the eventual outcome. And when I look around the world and see what people have to do to survive, I think, God, it's tough up here, but geez, we got so much more than other people do. And I think we have to recognize that and build on it.
You've been listening to The Corporate Whale, ANCSA, the First 10 Years, the second program in a 10-part series written and produced by Karen Michelle McPherson, with technical assistance from Phil Falkowski. Funding was provided by KUAC sponsors and the Alaska Native Human Resources Development Program of the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. Special thanks to the historical tape collection of the University of Alaska Archives and musicians Herbie Vent, Buddy Tabor, and XIT. Cassette copies of this program are available for $5 from Educational Media Services, Star Route Box 20155, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.